I guess I should push that button. And
you're kind of rusty here. It seems like you've been gone a lot.
Yeah. That's my wife, Renee. We're getting a divorce soon. And, okay, I have a riddle.
Okay.
And even you don't know the answer.
No, you didn't tell me what it was.
All right.
You didn't even tell me what the riddle was. So is it anything that needs to be censored?
No.
Or
no.
Filtered?
Yeah, that's your word.
Because filter. You haven't been very good at filtering this week.
You know, you just opened the door. Now I have to explain it. Okay?
Sure.
My son-in-law is a school teacher. I'm on a road in Payson that there's no one else. And there certainly, here's my jab, there certainly is no Fords out. Okay? I'm driving a Dodge. The snow is 2 to 3 feet deep. The sides of the road could be 4 feet deep. Solid ice. I think I'm going to go to McDonald's. Didn't turn out that way.
You went there, but there was nobody there.
And not only that, I couldn't even get into the parking lot. So I call my son-in-law, Phil, and but I don't think I called him. I thought I called Andy, our daughter. But he answered, and he had his phone in front of him, and it was a FaceTime phone, so I was going to show him the road and stuff. So during this conversation, I used a bad word.
One?
Yeah, just one. And he looked at me, and I go, "Oh, no. Are you in class?" And he goes, "Yeah." I said, "What did you answer my phone call for?" He says, "Well, I didn't know what was going on." I said, "Oh, gee, many Christmas." And I used a bad word.
You used some more bad words. Yeah.
And then I go, "Oh, Phil, you have to say Mark, filter, when I call you. You have to say filter. And I can hear kids in the background laughing. Mm-hmm. And I go, "Oh, this is in front of your class?"
Yeah.
And he goes, "Yes." He goes, "Let me tell you something. They've used worse words than that in class."
Yeah, I'm sure
and
they
there's,
have.
There's a bunch of kids laughing. I said, "I got to go." Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the deal. This morning, now up north, it's been snowing like crazy.
Right.
The wind blows in 4 different directions. The drifts are just unbelievably high. The roads are all iced up. And this is when 87 was closed between Phoenix and Payson. And then 260 was closed between Payson and the rim. So we're just locked down.
Right.
So I get up this morning and I decide I'm coming down here to do the show. But I know the road's icy, but I know 87's open. So I load up the dogs, and I have to dig the truck out.
Yes.
So I get the big tractor, and I kind of grade the road a little bit, and I get the truck running, and the bed of the truck is above the rails 2 or 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, and it takes forever to defrost the windshield. So I get in my truck, and I'm driving down, and keep in mind in Payson, you know how you go down the main street, and right. There's driveways to the left and the right?
Yes.
There's not one that's been plowed.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get into McDonald's. You can't get into any of the restaurants. You can't get into the Circle K's. You can't get in nothing.
Right.
All you can do is travel the road.
Mm-hmm.
So I go through town, kind of slippery. It's kind of icy. Got both hands on the steering wheel real tight. I make a left and go to the casino, and then I speed up. And the truck is vibrating like there's no tomorrow.
Okay.
It's shaking the whole truck. Mm-hmm. And I think, "Oh, I got a flat tire."
Mm-hmm.
So I pull off to the side of the road and I get out and I take my flashlight and I thump all 4 tires. Nothing. They're all fine. So I get in my truck and no matter what speed it is, 38 miles an hour and higher, it's just vibrating unbelievably bad.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind it's a dually.
Yes.
And keep in mind it's a monster. And
keep
in mind my Dodge is, it would never let me down. And again, I didn't see any Fords out in the last couple of days.
Okay.
So I did see one in a snowbank, though.
Stop it.
So that's the riddle.
That's the riddle.
Yeah. What's the matter with the truck?
Oh. Okay.
I gave some clues in there. Okay. Okay. But it took me a good 10 miles at 40 miles an hour to figure out what's going on.
Okay.
But the car guy got it. But he couldn't fix it. But I continued south,
yes.
And I did something that made it better.
Okay.
So, 602-508-0960, what was the matter with my truck? Now, I got a $50 gift certificate that they can use anywhere. Or they can use it in our shop.
Okay.
So, it's I can give them a savings bond. I can do whatever you decide. Okay,
but savings bond. I don't even know if they do those anymore. But we'll figure it out.
Just give them $50 where they can spend it wherever they want.
Okay.
So that's the story. A bad vibration.
Gotcha.
40 miles an hour and above. I tried to push it to 60, and the truck shook so bad the dogs start crying. their ears were flapping so hard that it was painful.
You are such an exaggerator.
8 degrees this morning. When I woke up.
Yeah.
And it was tough. But anyway, oh, we have a caller.
Yes.
And probably about my riddle.
Oh, I bet so.
Okay, who would be, Gil?
That would be Gary.
Gary? Tell me what. Oh, first, if you're talking about the riddle, then if you want to solve it, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling about the riddle.
Okay, go.
So I'm from Minnesota, and after a big snowfall, the rims get packed with snow and throw your balance off. Right?
Damn it.
That was so easy.
He's from Minnesota, though.
No, I should have.
I said you can't call from Wisconsin or Minnesota.
Too late.
Am I right?
Absolutely, you're right. The outside of the duels was packed. Remember, I said the wind was blowing from all different directions.
Yeah.
And the snow's 2 feet deep. Well, the inside. I mean, you couldn't see the wheels. The outside of the duels was packed with ice.
Yeah.
And, all right, Mr. Big Shot, how did I fix it?
Well, you either dug it out or kicked it out with your feet.
Okay, I couldn't. I mean, it was frozen solid. No, he still wins, though.
Yeah.
He still wins. But I got this brilliant idea that I would drag the brakes for like 4 miles and heat the rear disc. Heat the discs up.
Okay.
And I figured they would generate heat and make everything soft. So I dragged the brakes until I can smell them. Then I pull off the side of the road because I know that I have to let them heat the wheel up. I find a pocket knife. Well, that one black knife I carry in my console.
Right.
I get that black knife. So I got my flashers on. Keep in mind, it's a one-lane road. I pulled clear off the highway, and it's nice and soft.
Mm-hmm.
So I take the knife, and I kind of carve out all the ice and stuff like that. And then I could do like 100.
Yeah,
and great. I was passing lots of Fords that were still having problems. But he's exactly right.
Yeah.
From now on, when I have a snow riddle, I'm not going to let people from Wisconsin.
That's right. So, that was way too easy.
Gary, that obviously it's happened to you.
Yeah, after every big snowfall in Minnesota, that's what happens. Yep.
And you got the wind was blowing from all different directions because I needed that to happen in order to pack all the wheels, right?
Well, I heard that, but usually, you know, after it snows, we go out and do donuts and snow, and then that packs the rim.
Oh, yeah. That's probably what he was doing yesterday out on the roads, and he just didn't want to say that.
I'm pleading the fifth.
Yeah.
All right. Gosh.
So,
Gary,
we'll have to have Gil get Gary's information, and we can send him something.
Yes. And Gil, if you would give him some information, the shop phone number, ask for Andy or Renee, then that would be fine. Gil, you need to give him a 4-digit code so we don't have 100 Garys calling up. and then give us the 4-digit code so only Gary and we know that that's it. I can't believe he got that. Well, it's silly for me to think
right.
that he's not going to get it. Now, here's one. I didn't want to say one thing because it would tip people off, but tell me about the shake. I'm sure you remember it.
Well, it does sound like your tire's falling off the rim. It's really bad.
Okay. Here's what the deal was with me. It shook the back of the truck really bad. Because those were the duels that packed the wheels. And mm-hmm. I don't know anything about donuts, but I did loan my truck once or twice. and so the front wheels weren't the problem. But mm-hmm. the duels were, and he's exactly right, they were packed solid.
The in and the out?
No, just the outside.
Just the outside.
And so there's,
I mean, I knew it had to do with balance, that was all it could be. But I couldn't think of what it could have hooked onto or attached to or
okay.
whatever.
Well, you're the car guy's wife, so you were on. But remember, I always tell people that if it's a front end problem, it shakes the steering wheel,
right.
and the back end of the problem shakes your butt.
Right.
Well, this one shook the butt. I mean, even, like I said, the dogs were whining. Gary, he's going to give you a 4-digit number. You're going to, and he's going to text it to us or give us the number during a break, and we'll make sure that we get it to the right Gary. And actually, if Gary were to give him the last 4 digits of his Social Security number.
No, phone number would be better.
Okay, fine, yeah. fine. Why do you always overrule me?
Well, I wouldn't want to give out my Social Security number.
I said the last 4.
I don't care.
Okay. My goodness. All right, Gary, thank you very much. I'm going to write write Wiener, I mean Winner, next to your name. Thank you, Gary. Thank you very much. He really hit the number fast.
Yeah, he did.
I wasn't going to give the number thinking I could stretch this out for a while. Mm-hmm. Those Minnesota guys. Folks, I went to Minnesota not too long ago. I flew into Minneapolis,
right.
And then that was like a 9-hour flight. I'm teasing. And then we drove 3 hours on roads that were packed with snow, and the guy that was driving our car was going 80, and people were passing him.
Mm-hmm.
We went snowmobiling. If you've never been snowmobiling, you have no idea how cold you can get. And we went from bar to bar to bar. And the reason why we went from bar to bar to bar is we had this little piece of paper, and every bar you stopped by, they stamped it. The circle was like 50 miles.
Yeah.
We could only do like half the circle. We did the south part of the circle one day, and the next part. You know what they gave me for 50 miles of riding? And I had the appropriate snowsuit on. You know,
right.
I had the boots, and I had the plastic pants, and I had the long johns, and I had the gloves, and I had the, you know what they call that thing over your face?
I know, but I'm not going to
say. It's called a sock.
Yes. Okay.
I was calling it a head condom, and they thought that was pretty funny, but it's called a sock.
There you go.
So anyway, as you know, I got this beautiful T-shirt I'm never going to wear, and I'm never going back to Wisconsin. The worst part about the whole thing is the guys that I were with were really seasoned snowmobiles.
Right.
We weren't gone 10 minutes, and I had already tipped mine over. So, I mean, I can ride a quad and motorcycles and all that kind of stuff, but it was just a whole new experience.
Snow is a different story.
We get on the lake. These guys are doing 80, 90 miles an hour. I'm doing 55, 60. I figure there's got to be radar around there somewhere. and I'm scared they're going to lose me, and then I don't know where to go.
Right.
Because I have no – and they say, follow my tracks. Well, you're on a road that has 1,000 tracks to it. So this is what I told them. I said, you aren't going to have any problem finding me. Because you look for the smoke, because I'm going to pour gas out of my sled, they call it a sled, and then I'm going to light it on fire, and you won't have any trouble finding me, just go for the smoke. That's what I told them. So they told me their sleds were worth a little bit of money, and I didn't care. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, we'll be back. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and sitting here next to me is my wife, Renee. We've been married for 400 years, and she's put up with me for 399. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Hector, good morning. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
I had a quick question. I have an 01 Nissan Sentra, and it happens at least once or, you know, up to three times a month. While I'll be driving, and it won't shift past third gear. I'll pull over, turn off the car, start it back up, and it shifts just fine after that. It's an automatic. And just wondering if you might be able to help me out.
How many miles are on it?
I'd say a little over 100,000.
Okay. I'm not going to be able to tell you what's the matter with it. I think what I would do is pull the pan. Has it been serviced, or have you owned it since it was new? Okay.
Yes, I have, but it's been parked for, I'd say, about 15 years.
Okay.
It had to be fixed.
All right. I want you to consider two things. Number one, I want you to consider having somebody pull the pan, replace the filter, clean up the pan, and look in the pan for something that's not supposed to be there, like a broken snap ring. There's going to be little mounds of black powder that's clutches wearing. We don't care about that. There might be just little bitty flakes of metal in there. We don't care about that either. Clean up the pan, put a filter on, and be done. Now, the second thing I want you to do is when it happens, I want you to pull off, but I don't want you to shut it off. I want you to manually shift it. So put it down in low, and then in, chick, and I want you to manually shift it and see if that makes a difference.
Okay.
Now, if it doesn't, if a fluid shift doesn't change, I know two guys, two young bucks,
mm-hmm.
that know more about transmissions than any 10 guys I've ever met in my life. And I'm happy to call both of them if you'll send me an email after you have the transmission serviced. So do that first.
Yeah.
And you can find my email at marksalem.com. And actually, it's easy. It's mark@marksalem.com. But I'm happy to call them, and there's a 75% chance that they can probably tell us what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do that for you, but I want you to do the filter. Let me tell you a transmission story real quick. Not necessarily you, Hector, but everybody. had a guy call me, a friend of mine. He says this. My dad has this Dodge truck, and all of a sudden it was fine yesterday, and today it won't move. So I put it in drive, nothing happens. I put it in low, whatever, nothing happens. And I push it when it's in neutral, and it pushes. Mm-hmm. Then I put it in park, and it won't push. And I said, well, that eliminates the linkage falling apart, because if the linkage fell off, you couldn't put it in drive, and it wouldn't go to drive, but it'd be outside of park.
Yeah.
And so he said it can push the truck, you know, when it's in drive, but not. So the linkage has to be there. So anyway, I said to him, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
So I called Lorenzo, mm-hmm. and I said, I actually called Alan, my son, and
right.
then I had him call Lorenzo.
Mm-hmm.
He nailed it.
Yep.
So they brought the truck in, they pulled the pan, and the filter had fallen out. It was sucking air instead of fluid.
Right.
So that's all it was, is we went ahead and serviced it, and we put a new filter in it and stuff. But let me tell you, the diagnostic part of this, I could have diagnosed it without pulling the pan.
Okay.
Now, the fluids, let's say it's an inch and a half tall.
Right.
Okay. The suck part of the filter's an inch higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
I would have overfilled it by 2 or 3 quarts where I can get the fluid level to where the suck port is.
Yeah.
And then it would have moved.
Right.
And then I would have known that something was in the pan.
Right.
But I wasn't smart enough to figure that out.
Yeah.
So I had to lean on Lorenzo. And Alger's up north. Lorenzo's down south. They don't really do any retail work. They're both wholesale guys. But though, and Alger, to tell you a story, Alger worked for us in 1979.
Yep.
And when we come back, I'm going to tell you a great story about Alger.
You still got a few minutes.
I know. I'll tell you real quick.
Okay.
Alger. Alger was this young kid that was a skinny kid, and he had a Nova.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, we had a gas station, and he worked for us. And one day, Alger says, can I use the hoist on Sunday morning for Sunday? And I said, yeah, what are you going to do? And he goes, I'm going to take the automatic out and put a stick in there. And I said, if that car isn't gone by Monday morning when we open, I'm going to tow it out, I'm going to put it in the middle of the street, and the cops are going to pick it up. So you can't tie up the shop by having this problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is a true story. He's going to put a manual in it. He has to put the pedal assembly underneath the dash. He has to cut a hole in the floor. He has to mount all the linkage. He has to take the bell housing off, everything from the motor backwards. He puts a flywheel and a bell housing. He puts a clutch. He puts the transmission. He hooks up the linkage, and he puts a new drive shaft in it. Folks, this is the true story. He's laying rubber in front of my house at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
And we were just amazed that this kid put that together. Now, I don't know if he started Saturday night.
Doesn't matter. It was
Doesn't matter. Still fast.
For
him to make it work, it takes somebody that... But anyway, he's back. He's in transmission. It has been since high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably... I'm proud of many of the people that worked for us since 1979, but I'm especially proud of Alger because of where he started and where he's at today.
Right.
And he has the skills that a few other people have. But anyway, Hector, I'll help you. Just try that filter first. I'm thinking that there might be a problem there because he said two things. Hadn't been serviced in 100,000 and sat for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that, well, that's what we need to do. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City. It's run by Derek. It's a great place. Auto Dynamics has been around for a very long time. And Chuck Nida, who opened up Auto Dynamics, I've known him since 1968. So he opened this family-owned and operated shop in 1982. They do all kinds of work. But they, like most shops, if they're not the best place, they'll tell you that rather than tell you that they can fix your Rolls-Royce electric windows. So the idea is that Auto Dynamics is a great place. His technicians and his staff are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill. Therefore, he can ensure that you don't have a problem with one of them upselling because there's no benefit to them. So they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Auto Dynamics. Who's up next?
That would be Richard.
Richard, good morning. How can I help you?
Mark, I've got a 2013 Nissan Xterra, 30,000 miles on it. It's well-tuned. Can you think of anything aftermarket that would be economically justified to help me improve the gas mileage on the truck?
I can give you something really low-tech that will add 2 or 3 miles to the gallon. Just low-tech. You ready? You ready?
Sure.
Take a raw egg and duct tape it to your throttle pedal. Or put a hot cup of coffee that's full between your legs, or put a hot cup of coffee on the dashboard. And you got to get an extra big one because there has to be motivation there, really and truly. Air up your tires. Use the appropriate oil. Keep the windows rolled up. And drive like your mother's in the car or your wife as she's snapping at you about how you drive. It's just all about habit. I know the other day I filled up my truck and I reset my fuel economy. I just made a commitment to the truck. I'm just going to treat you easy. And I usually get 15 to 16 miles to the gallon. And I got all the way to Payson at 17.2. And I never exceeded the speed limit. So really,
he was probably thinking something more fun and exciting.
Well, I was thinking like a nut. Air intake.
Yeah.
No. Cold air does, in fact, carry more fuel, but the O2 sensor is going to shut off the fuel. So you're driving down the road, and even though you have cold air that carries more fuel, it's going to try to do that, but the O2 sensor is going to trim down the injectors. So it's going to say it's going to shut the faucet off. Really and truly, there's nothing. Keep the air filter clean. Air up all the tires to the maximum inflation written on the side. Drive like a granny, and that'll be the best I can do. I really can't offer you anything more.
No, but that's good advice.
Okay.
Good. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Richard. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. He surprised me because he said better fuel economy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for sure he was going to go for more power or performance.
Oh, okay.
And that's a different question and a different answer, if you know what I mean.
You're the one with more power.
You know
everything.
What? I do. But I haul horses and tractors and all the heavy stuff. And, you know, you got to go up the hills at the speed limit. Yeah. And besides that, you know, I'll tell you in just a minute, we got to take a break. Gosh darn it. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me for the next hour and a half. If you'd like to join us, you have a car question. If there's a disagreement in your household and you want me to break the tie, then if you want me to find against your wife, then it costs you money. And wives, if you want me to find against your husband, I pay you money. But nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem, and I've been in the car repair business for just shy of 40 years. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician and have been that way for a long time. My shop and my staff and myself, we fixed thousands and thousands and thousands of cars. So the way the radio show works is that you give us your make and model, mileage, and then describe the symptom. I'm not interested in what you think it is because you're not asking me that. It's easier just to talk about symptoms. So, and then generic questions. For instance, oil. I had a question about oil the other day when we were up north and the guys were decided to get together for lunch. And one of them wanted to know where he could find oil with zinc in it. And the old guys thought zinc took care of their motor. We know that that's not the truth anymore.
Okay.
So there is no zinc in oil. But it's important to explain to everybody that all the oil is backward compatible. So oil started out with an A designation, then B, C, D, E, F, G. So each oil was better than the last, but they're always backward compatible. So today, you know, like that 13 Sentra, he could go to a synthetic oil, maybe get better fuel economy. But it's going to be hardly measurable if one. One makes a difference, but if he went to a synthetic oil, I don't think the 13 calls for a synthetic, but he could certainly change as long as the weight was right. If he had a 1030 or if he was using a 2050, if he went to a 030 or a 020 or a 530 synthetic, he'd get better fuel economy, but I don't know if it would measure.
Oh, is this the Xterra that you're talking about? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Mike. Mike, thank you for calling. How can I help you?
Good morning. Hey, I've got a 2003 Chevy Suburban.
Okay.
And we basically, my wife stalled on the freeway, and I bought a new battery, put it in just to get her off the freeway. Battery light was flickering on and off. She drove it, and of course, you know, I told her to take it straight home. That didn't happen, so I went and after the battery died, we went and put the jumper cables on it, charged it up to get it home.
Okay.
And now, once we got it home, I have no crank whatsoever.
Okay. Well, you need a digital volt ohmmeter to diagnose this. A battery at 12 volts is about 10% charged. A battery at 13 volts is 100% charged. I want you to remember that. 12 to 13 is the range they normally go. If the battery's at 12 and you start the thing up and bring the idle up, it should go to 13. And that tells us the alternator, at least the alternator, appears to be working. Now, if you go to marksalem.com and you look at FAQ 28, it teaches you how to, with the headlights, it teaches you how to kind of diagnose why it wouldn't start. For instance, if your battery is truly dead and it won't crank over right now, then the headlights are going to be yellow if they're even on at all. And when you hit the key, the yellow is going to go away. So you need your wife up front or have her try to start it, and you stand up front and watch the headlights.
I put the battery and charged it completely up. It's registering perfect, and I put it back in the system. Now, before that happened, she had to get something out of the car and triggered the alarm. And, of course, since it was no battery, the alarm was triggered. So now I get full everything, no crank.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to track down the trigger to the solenoid. So you're going to have to crawl underneath there and take a voltmeter and have her hit the key. And on the back side of the solenoid, the 12 o'clock should be battery. And then there's a 3 o'clock and a 9 o'clock, and one of those is going to get hot when you hit the key. If one of them gets hot when you hit the key, then take a hammer and beat on the starter, not the solenoid, but the starter two or three times. Hit it hard enough to jar it, but not enough to break it. It's a little harder. It's kind of a tap, 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 okay? Don't beat on it and break the case. If then it starts, then it's the starter brushes on the backside of the starter. So they didn't contact the armature. They're worn out. They're dirty, whatever. And when you tapped it, it just vibrated the brushes to the armature. Then you know you need a starter. So you've gone from... it died and it wouldn't. Now, when you went to get it when the first time and you put a new battery in it, what happened
it
before?
It started right up.
I know, but before that, when she pulled off to the side of the road, what did she tell you was going on?
Everything just died.
And no crank, no horn, no nothing?
No nothing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. She ran it completely dead. Now, I don't know what you mean by you charged it up fully. But unless you know it's at 13 volts, then you don't know that you charged it up fully.
No, and I did. I charged it up fully, registered back at 13 volts.
Okay.
I took it out of the car completely,
okay,
put it back in the car, and it has full everything.
Okay.
It's just no crank. And I'm wondering, does it have an alarm system in there that might have done a security shut off?
You can chase that tail if you want. I think the better question is how often does this happen, Mark, where the alarm shuts down the system on a 03 Suburban? And the answer is about once a year in 25,000 cars. So you can you can chase that tail, but that's the last place I'd be looking. I'd be checking for 12 volts at the starter and so forth. Now, if you go to the FAQ 28, I'm teaching you how to find a bad connection at the battery. So you got side post on those, and you take a pair of pliers and you pull out the lug. And you look inside, and you'll find that the face of the bolt and the metal that it touches is all corroded. And so you got to clean all of that up. But you can't see that. You can't see that until you take a pair of vice grips, you grab a hold of that little 5/16, you hold onto the cable. Of course, the cable's disconnected from the battery, and you just pull that lug nut out of there, or that stud out of there, and try that. All righty. Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem with Renee Salem. Together we have 80 years of auto repair.
Oh, boy. Don't even say that.
You got 40 and I got 40, so we got 80 years. Actually, we got 39. I think we're going to be 80 years in October, or 40 years in October, if I'm not correct.
Yes, we are.
Okay, let me tell you real quick about Thompson's Auto Repair. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair. Their families date back to the 60s and the 70s in car repair and gas stations. It's a really good place. It's the only place in Mesa that I recommend. He has ASC certified technicians. He really does a good job. He knows right from wrong. But Brian and Thelma are exactly the people that you would hope would be in your neighborhood. They're very giving. They're very nice. They don't drink and get drunk like my wife does.
Oh, stop.
I'm kidding. But they're good people. And when you meet Brian or Thelma, you're going to know why I talk nicely, so nicely about them. Rich, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I'm in Scottsdale. I've got a 21-year-old Honda Accord, four-cylinder, with 200,000 miles on it. I love the car. Drives my wife crazy. She said, you keep pouring money into it. I said, honey, do the math. I put about $100 to $150 a year into maintaining the car, and most of the work I do myself. You do the math. I'm keeping this car. Anyway, my question is, how is it going to affect my gas mileage? I get about 22 to 24 miles per gallon if I'm driving around with 75 pounds of tools in my trunk.
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but there are times. I mean, I can't tell the difference when my wife and my dogs are in my truck. I mean, and I'm doing fuel economy to the tenth, so I don't know. I think you'd have more effect of having all the windows down and having the back window on your Honda Accord turn into a parachute. So, but 150 divide 150 by 12 months. That's about $10-12 a month.
Yeah.
Okay. So the answer to your wife is your car costs more than $10 or $12 a month. That's all you're spending for the privilege of owning that car. So you could buy a new one, but in fact the license plate and tax on a new one would pay the fuel on that Honda for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how many tools you've got, but if the windows are rolled up, the air conditioning is used intermittently, and you're probably doing some stop-and-go driving, but then you turn around and tell me you're in the low 20s in fuel economy, I don't think there's a problem.
Yeah.
Your real problem is with your wife, and I can't help you with that.
You said you could. That's why he called.
And you know what? If she wants to know who said that, tell her his name is Edward. Okay? Don't tell her it's Mark. Thank you, Rich. Thank you very much. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Well, good morning. I've got an 09 Impala. It's 130,000 miles. Just the other day, message came on the dashboard, engine hot, turn AC off. The only thing about it is it's also got a temperature gauge, not an idiot light, but that temperature gauge is all the way down on C for cold, so I don't know if it's just a computer glitch. Oh, and also, the engine's not hot.
Okay. It shouldn't be at the cold. Your 09 should run between half and three quarters.
It used to, yes.
Okay.
But so there's a combination going on here. The needle on the gauge, it's sitting down on the C, so it's not even showing the temperature motor like it did before I got this, message on the dash.
I don't know. As you already know, there's a problem in just the left and right hand. You know, we got a hot message, and then we've got a cold gauge. So I don't know.
Yes, and the motor's not hot.
Okay, and here's how. Tell me why you say that. What is it that you know? What is it you're doing to know that the motor's not hot?
Well, I've got one of the infrared temperature gauges that I use for various things, and I can lift the hood and I can shoot it with the little red dot, and the engine's not overheated.
Okay,
which is a kind of a weird deal too.
Okay. Well, the gauge isn't working either.
Yeah,
correct. But my gauge is not working, and I'm getting a message that jumps up on the dash.
I know.
Saying the engine's hot, shut the AC off. So it's a combination. Two things are wrong.
Okay. Well, no, you don't know what's wrong till you identify the problem. But I need you to gun the thermostat housing, and I need you to gun the top hose and the bottom hose. That'll tell you all you want to know. The second thing is I would probably just turn the key on, and I'd go to the temperature switch, and I would have my wife inside the car, and I'd grab the wire off the temperature switch, and I'd just ground the wire, 1-2 and let go, 1-2 and let go, and you should see the gauge swing in the opposite direction. So if it starts hot, it'll swing to cold. If it starts cold, it'll swing to hot. So I'd make sure that the temperature gauge is talking to the dashboard. The second thing I'd do is I'd go in and clear that code, and then I'd see if it comes back. Because this time of the year in the wintertime, that engine hot, shut off the air conditioning, it's programmed to say, turn off the compressor because the condenser is in front of the radiator. The condenser gets really hot. It adds hot air to the radiator, so shut the air off because I see an overheat. So it could be that the sensor is bad, and then there's a sensor that talks to your dashboard, and there's a sensor that talks to the computer. And if the sensor that talks to the computer is grounded, then it's telling the computer you're really hot. So the computer turns on the light and says, hey, turn off the air conditioning. So keep in mind, we got two temperature sensors. One talks to the gauge, and one talks to the computer. For me, I'd plug in my scanner. I'd talk to both of them. I'd probably find the problem there. Then and only then can you answer all those questions. But answering the questions can only happen after you fix the problem or identify the problem. But now that I've talked myself into a circle, his coolant sensor is bad.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got it. All righty. Thank you very much, Bob. But Lauren, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes. I've got a 2014 Chevy Cruze. And we've got, it has about 60,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And it is four-cylinder. It's running just fine. But what's happening is with the temperature, you can have the dial turned over a little bit to the cool side, mm-hmm. and you'll still get the hot air coming in, even if you have it directed where it blows on your towards your chest,
sure.
Then you'll get warm air coming in.
Okay.
Now, if you change it to blow up by the windshield, then the air will be cool, like it probably should be for that setting.
Okay. The question is before anybody can fix this, this is the question. If you go to the extreme on the temperature, will the top vents, the windshield, the center vent, and the floor, will they change as well? Now, when we go in heater, we're going to blow a little bit of cold air on the windshield because the cold air is going to suck all the fog off the windshield. So it's kind of normal that we're going to turn the air conditioning on in the defrost mode, and we're going to use the air conditioning to suck the vapor and the mist or the fog off your windshield. So the first thing I want you to do is go extreme hot and extreme cold, and let's make sure that both of those are working in all three modes. Then the second thing is this is kind of important. I was coming down this morning. It's 8 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, on the dashboard, it's 8 degrees.
Right.
So I'm having a tough time finding warm.
You know what I mean?
So I'm going, I have a temperature. So I go up to like 78, and it's, okay. I go to 85, ooh, I got warm. But then I start dropping it down because I get too hot. Well, I end up going down to 71 before I get kind of cold.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little confused about how that truck really works, but I'm not going to look at the numbers anymore. I'm just going to simply just take the heat and just get it up till I like it. And then when I'm too hot or the dogs are panting like crazy or you're yelling at me, mm-hmm. then I'm going to turn the heat knob back down. I don't think the numbers mean anything in my new Dodge truck. I don't think they do. But I need you to check both ends, and then your garage is going to be very happy that you did that. And then I also want you to forget the numbers, and I just want you to dial it to heat, make sure you get what you want, and then dial it to cold and make sure you get what you want, and then don't look at the numbers anymore or the red or the blue stripe on your temperature. So here's the reason. I don't know where they're getting that. Are they getting the temperature inside the cab? Or are they getting the temperature during the climate control system? I don't know where they get that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you see what I'm saying? I don't know the answer to that. And write that down because I said I don't know.
Yeah, boy.
So anyway, that's what the offer I've got you. But I need to see extremes. If you say I can't get cold or really, really cold, if I can't get really, really hot, then we're going to go after the blend door, which is the mixture control for that. So that could be it. It could be sticking after,
that's
you
what
know,
I was thinking,
14.
Or part way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't
this, this is with the air conditioner off.
Well, here's the deal. When you go to defrost, we're going to turn the air conditioning on whether you like it or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And like I said, okay. here's the deal. Remember when you take a cold glass of tea and you set it on the counter, and you know all that sweat on the outside of it? That the cold air of pop or beer or whatever you're drinking, whatever your wife's drinking, then the moisture in and around the glass is sucked to the cold glass, and it creates that condensation. Well, even though it's colder than heck, when I go to defrost, we're going to turn the air on, and we're going to blow a little bit of cold air up there, and I'm sure many of you will agree with me. You're driving down the road, and your windshield gets really foggy. You go to defrost, the fog's gone. Mm-hmm. And I did that today. Mm-hmm. I was very proud of myself.
Yeah.
But we turn the air conditioning compressor off, whether you like it or not, on, and we just blow a little cold up there, and the moisture or the cold of the air conditioning just sucks the fog off the windshield. And if you don't have air conditioning, then you're never going to get the fog off the windshield, or if your air conditioning is out of service. But anyway, Lauren, we got to go, but thank you very much. That was a great question. Speaking of great questions, you don't have to worry about Kurt's Automotive at I-17 in Bell, whether he's a good shop or not. Kurt's a master, Eric's a master, Jeff's a master. Now, Kurt's the old guy with gray hair. Jeff and Eric are young bucks that think they know it all. They don't have a clue as to what know-it-all is, but Kurt and I do. Nevertheless, you got three masters at Kurtz. They're really good as a team, just like most of us are with our staff. And they really do a good job, and I can't tell you how many times that I have sent a customer, because they're not on my side of the town, sent them to Kurtz, and they've pulled a rabbit out of their hat.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to tell you that if you live near I-17 in Bell, if you don't have a garage, then stop by for an oil change or call for an oil change. See how they treat you. See how you like them. And if you have a good shop, then you should stay with it. But if you're looking for a good shop, Kurtz is a great guy. Keith, you're up next. Keith, how can I help you?
Yeah, I have a 06 HHR.
Okay.
Four-cylinder, 2.2.
Okay.
70,000 miles.
Okay.
For the last 4 years, we've had this periodically, this happens. The power steering will come on the dash, and you'll be driving, and it'll just start freaking out, and the speedometer will go up and down. And so we took it into the dealer, and there was a recall, and they replaced the motor, the power steering motor.
Okay.
And then we've had other work done on it, and we just can't seem to find it. And we had a couple computers up in the front. There's little flat ones that go down, up and down in there.
Uh-huh.
We've had those replaced, back to the deal and have them reprogram the whole car.
Okay.
And we're driving down the road just a week ago, and the thing started freaking out again. And what it does is, you have your seatbelts on, those little dinging lights go off, but then you're going down the road, and all of a sudden, bing, 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 and then it starts to freak out a little bit.
Okay, but your
going
dash
down
is
the
freaking
expressway.
Out. Wait a minute. The dash is freaking out. What does that have to do with the power steering? What's it? Give me the symptoms.
Well,
the
power steering.
Steering
comes up on the dash.
Okay, forget
it,
that.
You know, on the
okay,
yeah,
we need to find the problem with that's entertained by the or that's being caused by the seatbelt stuff. We need to go there first. And if you have an electric motor on the steering, and so you have electric steering, if you have a problem with the steering, you're going to know it because it's going to go from power to manual. So you haven't said anything about that. I don't care the fact that it's got a steering light on the dash. I don't care. I'm going to go through I'm going to go find the circuit that's causing that seatbelt problem. I have to go somewhere first. I'm really not going to check the power steering light because you haven't had a power steering failure. So I've got to figure out why the light's coming on, and it could very well be that we have a seat sensor that's wired on the stupid same circuit. And then that causes, when we lose the ground or lose the power, it causes your seat belts to ding and your power steering light. I use that in a simplistic example. But realistically, there's lots of parts, lots of circuits that share the same ground. And we now know how important it is to fix the ground. You got two choices. Have somebody chase it down or wait till it gets worse and easier to find. As long as the steering wheels and the steering works, then I don't think you're in significant problem.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and I'm going to do just exactly what I promised. I'm going straight to Brian because he waited over the break. And the phone number, if you want to chime in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Brian, how can I help you?
Yeah, I got a 2003 Ford F-150, 4.2 V6, 116,000 miles, about 85,000-90,000 when the gas gauge would get to about a just under a quarter tank, it dropped like a rock, you know, and I knew there was 5 gallons and it just, you know, within 30-40 miles it's on empty. So I thought, well, I guess I didn't do anything about it really. And then I got 116,000. At 113, the fuel pump went out. Okay. So I put in a new fuel pump, so I knew it wasn't the float, and now it's doing the same thing, dropping like a rock. And if I put in, if it drops to empty, I put in like $25, maybe 8-10 gallons. I can drive 25-30 miles, and it still won't take off the low gas light. And sometimes I park at home after driving 15-20 miles.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not the float. If the float was bad, the float would sink to the bottom and you'd have an E all the time. The other arm of the float has a contact where it swings like on a piano. And so that thing is probably, it's only one of two things. It's the sending unit inside the tank that's attached to the float, or you got a gauge problem. But typically when you have a gauge problem, you have more than one gauge. So, here, try this, because it works sometimes. Go buy a bottle of Tecron from one of the Chevron gas stations. Put that in your tank, run it about a half, and use the Tecron. Sometimes the Tecron will clean up the piano keys on your sender. But if you can imagine piano keys, and let's pretend that there's 10 of them, this little arm, like a record player arm, just as the float goes up and down, this contact swings left and right. So you clearly have something wrong from a quarter down. It's not likely the sending unit is completely bad because you wouldn't have any reading. But I'm betting you missed a chance to clean up or replace the sending unit when you replace the fuel pump. So don't be surprised if you have to go in there again.
Okay.
All righty.
But if that doesn't clean it up, then you got to go back in the tank again, right?
Well, yeah, but see, what happens is we have the ability to take the wire off the tank and feed it different amounts of voltage or ohms, so we're able to check the gauge. So we can go, oh, this should be full, and this should be three-quarter, and half, and quarter. Oh, look there, at a quarter it fell to zero. So now we know the sender's bad. But try the Tecron, because about a third of the time, between a third and a half, it actually makes a good difference. But you got nothing to lose but $8-$10 for a can of Tecron.
Yeah.
All righty.
Yeah.
Okay, Ryan, thank you very much.
I got one other quick question.
Okay.
If I can.
Yeah.
Okay, front brakes. The rear brakes, I put new discs and shoes on at 107. I got 116. The front brakes, probably a no-no. I put at 60,000 miles. I didn't turn the rotors, and I didn't put on new rotors at 60,000. I just put new pads on.
Okay.
And ever since then, I've been driving. I let off the steering wheel, hit the brake. It's never pulled. But the guy said, well, those rotors don't look bad at 60,000. Okay. Now, in rotating the tires with 116, those pads I put on at 60 are gone. But they're the original Ford rotors from 2003, never been turned.
Okay.
Would you turn them with new pads or new rotors?
Stop. The rotors, there's no such thing as you look at a bad rotor. There's no such thing. There's a minimum thickness written on the hub. It'll say 1.1 millimeters, or it'll say 850 thousandths. A rotor's bad when the thickness of the rotor is less than the minimum thickness written on the rotor. I don't care if your rotors are 400 years old. If they're not below the minimum, they're fine. So I don't know what conclusion you want to draw from all of this, but I don't put rotors on unless they're less than minimum. That's the way my shop works, and I can tell you all my friends do the same thing. If you've got a guy that can look at a rotor and tell you it's bad, you need to change technicians. That's all there is to it. Steve, you're up next. Steve, how can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Hi.
I have a 2013 Nissan Xterra with 130,000 miles, but when I'm driving, even when it's cold out like now, it feels like the heater's on. But the temperature gauge is, you know, about a quarter of the way from cold up to hot. It's not, you know, never gets high.
Okay. And you don't have any climate controls on at all.
Yes, you're right.
Okay. Well, I want you to picture the letter Y, okay? Mm. And the bottom of the Y, the stalk of the Y, that's the air coming into the cabin. Then we have hot air and cold air on the Y. And where the Y meets the stalk is the blend door. And the blend door's job is if you want all cold, it closes off hot. And if you want all hot, it closes off cold. So I think what I would do first is, if I was working on your car, I'd probably put a pair of vice grips on the heater hose, shut the heater hose off, stop the heater from being, and then I'd let you go drive it for a couple days and see, is you still got the hot air? That's what I would probably, you could do that yourself. Just be careful. You want to put some fuel line on the needle nose pliers of the vice grips. So when you pinch the hose, you don't cut the hose. You just pinch it and you put the vice grips on there. The other thing is again, you go to the extreme. Do you have good air conditioning and exactly what you want, and it's not lukewarm on the complete air conditioning side? Then you go to the heat. Sometimes on the old Nissans, well, it isn't an old one. It's a 13.
Yeah, that's
usually
we
had a cable that opened and closed. Now we have an electric motor that opens and closes. We go into the electric motor, and we find cheeseburgers, lipstick, ink pens, bubble gum. Paper straw, dirty underwear. We find all kinds of stuff in the dashboard. So somebody, if you can't get extremes, then we have to go into the dash. And it could be... expensive in my world is $400 or $500. So it's not likely to be that expensive to go find it and fix it, assuming we don't have to do major, not modifications, but major parts changes. But in reality, the labor just gets you there. So if I have to replace one part or two, there's really no additional labor. And if there is, it's one-tenth of $125, which is what? $12.50. So that's kind of how I would work it. But I'd shut the hot water off to the heater to see if that made a difference. That would tell me that the heater is part of the problem.
Okay, so you think it's possibly like just within the heating and, you know, the air conditioning system, but is it going to overheat if I'm driving?
No.
Okay,
no.
Good.
No, not at all. I think that the Y, if you can picture the Y, I think that the cold air is not... we're not closing the cold air off completely, so we got it half open. So maybe we got a little. Or on the cold air, when you ask for nothing, we've got the Y side. The hot air is stuck open. So
yeah.
But once you do a little testing, and I imagine you're going to spend $50 to $75, maybe $85 in diagnostics. But once you do some testing, you can answer the question pretty simple.
But are you asking, is it going to overheat when you plug off that heater hose?
Oh. No. Like if I do nothing, if I just go on a long trip,
okay,
and I don't use, like, I just didn't want it to be like my engine is actually overheating and I'm missing it on the gauge or something.
No, not at all. No. If it was, it'd be the first one I've seen in 39 years.
Okay.
And let me tell you, you know what a handshake is, a firm handshake with another guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because the women are always a little soft on their handshakes. But if you grab a hold of the upper hose of a fully warmed up car and you shake the hose like hand, you wrap your hand around it, that motor is at operating temperature if you can't hang on for 5 seconds.
Right.
And if you can shake the upper hose and you can hold on to it, and you pull your hand back real fast, then it's likely running over 260. But we want it to run 220. So there is no relationship. This is going to be an air direction problem underneath the dash. That's where it's going to be. All righty, we got to talk about Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive at 40th and Greenway. Tom and I are cut from the same cloth.
Yes, you are.
We both have no filters, and we're really good at what we do. Tom's really good, as is most of the shops with diagnostics. But Tom embraces that when you start off a question by waving the flag in front of the bull. I've had my car to every doggone shop in town, and nobody can fix it. I've spent $4,000, and no one can get this bird noise out of my glove box.
2 minutes.
That's what you say to Tom. It's like waving the red cape in front of a bull, and he snorts. Hopefully he doesn't snort on you, and he'll go fix it. You just got to wave the flag. He's a good guy. He's 40th and Greenway. We've known him since 1994.
Yep.
And like I said, we talk a lot.
Yes, you do.
We both of you. we psychologically help one another.
Yeah, that's not it.
I'm talking him off the cliff, and he's talking me off the cliff, and we talk about, you know, our employees and problems and decisions. You know, decisions on what do we do? Are you going to get a dyno? I've already had one. This is what I found. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, he's a good shop.
He is. He's a very good shop.
If you're up in the area of 40th Street and Greenway.
Yeah, and he's a good guy. And if you want, you can walk in and say, Mark Salem says you couldn't diagnose a broken windshield, and that'll always get his, you know, his back up a lot. But he's not a violent man. Good thought about that is he's not a violent man. Okay, the lines are wide open. So if you want to jump, jump now, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960. My email address is mark@marksalem, like the cigarette, .com. And I say cigarette, and the young kids look at me like,
what they've never heard of that. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Well, yeah, and you're right. So you can send me an email. My wife and my daughter kind of filter the emails. They kick out the spam. But the car questions come to me, so they're passed on. Now, it may take me a day or two to get back to you because sometimes, you know, I have to sleep in the barn, and there's no phone in the barn, and there's no Wi-Fi in the barn, but I will call. And if you leave me a phone number, I always call from a blocked line, but sometimes there has to be a give and take. So is the vibration in the back of the car, the front of the car? Is it shaking the seat of your pants, or is it shaking the steering wheel? Those are kinds of questions I'm going to have to kind of hone in on what it is. So if you leave a number and you see one, somebody call, this is the first thing I say. Hi, this is Mark Salem. I'm answering your email. That way you know not to hang up on me. But there's been times people have used bad language, and I'm not going to give their phone numbers out, but that's the way it is. We'll be back right after this. 20 minutes after the hour. Real quick, Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around 40th Street in Washington since 1968. Phil worked on Fred Flintstone's car. He's been around transmissions since Fred Flintstone. So if you have an old car, he's really good at that because he's been there and done that. But he's on 40th Street in Washington. He's the only transmission shop in Phoenix that I can recommend. And I can tell you, they know what they're doing. We got one line open, 602-508-0960. Glenn, you're first. How can I help you?
Thank you, Mark. Hi, Renee.
Hi.
Mark, did you enjoy your vacation? And did Renee go with you?
She went to Costa Rica with me. And all I can tell you is she got sick, and she said that it was food poisoning, but she was gone with a bunch of the other wives, and they got sick too. So I don't know if it's alcohol related or what, but that's a different story.
No, I didn't go to Wisconsin. No,
but no.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't do that.
No,
that was for the guys.
Yep. All righty. Tell me what you got.
Well, I wanted to hear more. If you wanted to share your snowmobiling tales, I'd love to hear more about it. Otherwise, I could ask you a question.
About. Did you hear how he said about? It's because he's from Wisconsin or Minnesota. About. Yeah, all I can tell you is I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We ate some really great food. You walk into a bar and you strip.
Yep.
Okay? And when you walk outside, everybody else is putting their pants, their jackets, their sock, their helmet, their goggles. And by the time they get to their sled, they're dressed. Mark is sitting on his sled going, can you guys give me another few minutes?
Another hour or so?
Yeah, because I can't get dressed that fast. The hardest part was getting those big old heavy gloves over the cuff of your jacket. And,
It's a process.
Yeah, yeah. But I had a good time. There was really good food. And I'll tell you something about that area. I never saw anybody act like an ass. I never saw anybody, except our group. But
except
I never
you.
Saw anybody in the bars. Everyone was so nice. And it was a great time. But anyway, tell me about your problem.
Well, I was just curious if you have advice on wiper blades that seem to deteriorate in Phoenix, faster than you ever need them.
Yes.
Is the idea just get cheap ones and replace them every year?
That's what I do. That's what I do. I've had from the $40 ones to the $12 ones on my truck, and frankly, they don't work any different, any better, or at least I haven't done a scientific study, and I didn't write down how many times they flapped and all that kind of stuff. But I can tell you, for me, I get cheap ones. Now, we sell ANCO, and that's a company that's been around a very long time, and it certainly doesn't end in China. So the idea is that we sell ANCO, and our customers are pretty happy. But for me, cheapest ones I can find. All righty.
Thank you, sir.
All right, you betcha. Jerry, you're up next. Jerry, how can I help you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Okay. I have a 95 Ford Taurus, and I had a blown-out headlight that was out high and low beam and one bulb. So I took the bulb out. Well, there was no bulb. It's just a filament. However, I noticed content, you know, moisture in the lens, both lenses, you know, left side, right side, have moisture. So last week I put in a new bulb, you know, had a glove on so I didn't hurt it.
Right.
I had to go to Las Vegas, and I drove up to the restaurant, and I noticed it looked like I had one of the beams was burnt out on my left side again.
Okay.
And I put it up and down. Well, both of them went out then. And I think it's a moisture problem, I think, condensation, okay. I assume. What can we do to eliminate the problem
okay.
of moisture?
Well, there's two things you can do. You can replace the headlight lens assembly, but if you can pull it out and fill it with water
yes.
and find out where the water leak is, then I'd just put a big goober of silicone on there. I'd let it dry,
okay.
and then I'd fill it up with water again. Now, where the bulb plugs in, I want you to put a little dielectric grease, and you can buy a little bitty
okay.
tube at the auto parts store, put it on the bottom of the bayonet of the bulb, and put it in. That's how I would handle
okay.
it.
That's how you'd handle it.
Yep.
So that sounds good. I want to share another story. I bought this Ford was a Arizona car, by the way. And I bought a Buick in Minnesota that was a Snowbird's Arizona car. And the air circulation thing was a real problem. Well, I noticed, you know, these palm trees have these little seeds that fall. I don't know where they come from, up high or mm-hmm. wherever. They look like miniature peas. Well, I could see the whole fronting up in front of the windshield out there was full of this,
yes.
these little beads. And so I let a mechanic clean that all out, but that wasn't something that might be causing some other people air handling problems with their vehicle with, this, like
yep.
you say, all kinds of stuff in that system. From underwear to lipstick.
Yeah, and what
yeah.
that is that, yeah, underwear to lipstick. He put lipstick in there. I didn't put lipstick
in there.
He
probably did. We just didn't remember.
All right, anyway, so yes, you're right. The air, the screen on the front of the windshield is air in. So we start
yeah.
blocking that, and we have a problem with the temperature and the volume and all that kind of stuff. And yes, there are a lot of problems with that area, but they have to be matched to a symptom. And typically when we're in normal, we have substandard airflow, but when we're in maximum, we have perfect airflow. And bingo, you
okay.
grab your vacuum and vacuum that off. But thanks for bringing that up, Jerry. That was really good.
Yeah.
Good luck on your headlight. And you know, he has a Ford, so his success rate's probably pretty small.
Low
but
stop.
Nevertheless, Jerry, thank you. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mrs. Salem and Dr. Mark.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Doctor, oh, boy.
Well, I've called a lot of times, and he always has the solution.
Oh, boy.
You know what?
More than most doctors do, that's
let,
for sure.
Let me tell you something. In my family, the common thing, my brothers, my sisters, my mother, my father, for generations, they say this.
Oh, do we need a filter?
Yes,
okay.
we do.
No.
If BS was snow, he'd be a walking blizzard.
Yeah.
But I'm a lot closer than they are in guessing. But anyway, thank you for bringing that up, Bob. How can I help you?
Well, the little woman has a 2001 Saturn LS1,
okay.
130,000 miles, fantastic little car, just goes like stink, she takes good care of it, just runs wonderful, just great little car, she loves it.
Hey, no, just a minute, put her on the phone, I want to talk to her, I can hear her in the background, but I'll talk to her after you tell me the problem, go ahead.
Okay, we use it It's a little runabout car.
Okay.
We use it, though, when we go over to Los Algodones or Rocky Point, because the little sucker gets 40 miles a gallon. I mean, it just cruises. AC is cold. Just a great little car. Here's the problem. I like to use cruise control.
Okay.
It doesn't have cruise control. Solution, please.
You know, Sears was the last place that I knew that added aftermarket cruise control. I think what I would do if I were you is there's two things. You can take a short stick and put it on the throttle.
No, I wouldn't do that.
And jam it to the seat.
Yeah, no.
I've done that.
No.
Okay. See, I can hear her laughing in the background, can't
that's
you?
That's not safe.
All right, number two, you get on the internet and you find aftermarket cruise control. Find something and then give those links to your garage and say, hey, John, look these aftermarkets over and tell me what you think. Which one should I get? Which one's going to be the easiest to put on? Which one looks like it's the most dependable? That's the process. The answer is it's not too hard to do one of those. It's just a matter of a little bit of wiring, and we got to hook it up to the brake light switch so it'll cancel when you hit the brake. And we have some kind of a servo that's going to attach to the throttle and give you the cruise control. I have one other real quick response, and this is a guaranteed fix. Have her drive.
Oh, boy.
Have her drive. Anyway, I heard her in the background.
Yes.
Tell her I if I offended her, Renee is sorry.
Yeah.
Okay? All righty.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
All righty. Well, God bless you and your
one
wife.
Minute.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr.
Ryan.
Mark.
You betcha.
Goodbye.
All right, what do you want me to do?
You got 1 minute.
Oh,
so.
Well, I can't get Phil, but I want Phil to stay there because he'll be first, and I promise. So our breaks are about 3 minutes long. But I also want to tell you real quick about Harkers. Harkers, Bob and Ellen own Harkers Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and Ellen are a great team, kind of like Mark and Renee. She handles the front office. Bob handles the shop. Bob is another one of those guys that you can just wave the flag in front of and say, nobody can fix this, and he'll fix it. He's probably one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met, and I truly think there's times he's better than I am and better than I know. So if you've got one of those problems nobody can fix, Harkers, 38th Avenue and Indian School. But if you're in that area and you don't have a garage, I promise you, you'll be happy with Bob and Ellen at Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife. I need to clarify something.
Okay, good.
I'm a little ornery today because I've been up
today.
North. I've been up north, and I've been all by myself, and you haven't been around to correct me and give me the dirty look and all that other kind of stuff. So, yes, I'm a little ornery. As far as my ability to fix your car, I'm only as good as the answers you give me to the questions I give you. There's three answers, yes, no, or I don't know. I'll usually get pretty doggone close, but I'm only as good as the information you give me. Phil, you're up first. Thank you for holding, by the way, Phil. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I call you Mark the Man.
Oh, that's okay. That's a better than what she calls me.
Hey, a little debate, maybe. My brother has a new Pacifica, and I've rented a lot of cars, too. All the new cars, a lot of them the engine will stop at a light and then restart again.
Yep.
So we're wondering, what is the starter doing? Is it going to die out quicker because there's so many starts and stops to those new types of cars? Or do they do something to make them last?
No. I have a good answer for you. First of all, I drove a truck, and I was taking it to a TV station to do a piece, and it died at every traffic light. And I was thinking to myself, the oil light would come on temporarily because the engine was dead, and then the computer wiped the oil. I was just panicked because this thing stopped. And I'm looking around, and I put it in park, and I try to start it. And all you got to do is take your foot off and hit the gas. But the answer, and that was God knows how many years.
Yeah,
the answer to your question is that has not been a problem. I don't know why. But that has not, because every time you stop, like you said, the starter's going to engage.
Yeah.
Every time you take off, I should say. But to answer your question, I would have no problem with what they call kill it at a stop, and then I wouldn't have a problem and let the starter life be part of my decision. That's what I tell you. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All righty, Randy, you're up next. Randy, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Hey, great show, man. We just moved to Yuma back in November, and I kind of found you through the Patriot radio station out of Phoenix, and really enjoy the show. So thanks for taking the call.
No problem. Thank you,
Mark. I'm the happy owner of a 2004 Toyota Tundra. I've got like 317,000 miles on the rig right now, and it's just been a phenomenal vehicle. I think I got it on a good day when they built it. I really passed the timeline on changing the timing belt, you know, the serpentine belt. You know, my friends kept saying, change it. And I said, nah. And then one day I said, okay, I'm going to change it. So at 237,000 miles, I changed the timing belt. I got to tell you, I took it off. I stretched it. I mic'd it. It was within 5,000ths of an inch in stretch, and there was not one check mark anywhere on any of the teeth. So I'm really impressed with the quality of the vehicle.
Okay.
So, but here's the question.
Okay.
High mileage engine, oil pressure right now is, you know, it's running a little bit lower. I think I know the answer, but I want to get your opinion.
Okay.
It cruised at highway speeds. I'm right at the mid-range. I don't have a digital gauge it's just basically an idiot gauge, high, low, and then a couple of marks in the middle.
Okay.
So I'm running about mid-scale at freeway speeds or, you know, anything above about 2,500 RPM. It seems to be okay. At idle, it drops down to, you know, very low on the scale.
Okay.
I'm thinking that, you know, it's probably the journals there on the crank that are getting worn out a little bit, so it's starting to lose a little oil pressure there. Is there a way to increase the oil pressure a little bit without having to rebuild the entire engine? Is there like an oil pressure adjustment on it?
Well, first of all, I disagree with your diagnosis. The fact, one of the things you missed that you didn't say to me, and I listened carefully, is if you start getting lifter rattle, then you have low oil pressure, and it won't take long for that to happen, 15, 20 seconds. So I'm not real concerned because you haven't said a lick about when I come to a stop, the motor starts clacking, okay? So I think I would pull the oil pressure switch out. I would screw in a manual. I'd bring it out underneath the hood and tape it to the outside of the windshield. Usually shops have that stuff, and they'll usually let you use one for 24 hours, and they're going to charge you to install it and put it back in, and gives you peace of mind.
Uh-huh.
If the journals start wearing, then you're going to have metal in the oil, and you're going to have knocking noise, and the knocking noise isn't going to go away above idle. It'll be there on the journal all the time. So load creates the noise. I'm not worried about your 317 miles. I think you dodged a huge bullet.
Yeah.
A huge bullet by waiting till, what, 280, he said?
230 or something like that.
You have no idea if that belt would have gone bad, how much more it would have cost you. Now, sometimes we don't bend valves,
right,
but at 70, 80 miles an hour, those risks goes way up. My personal limit is 100,000 miles on a timing belt. How many do we do a week? Three?
Yeah, probably.
And the ones that get towed in typically have wadded the belt up. We have to buy a cover. We have to buy all the guides. We have to buy the hydraulic or the spring-loaded tensioner. We have to buy a bunch of stuff. Sometimes do the cam seal because the belt wipes out the cam seal. So I think you should go back to that 100,000-mile limit. But as far as the oil pressure is concerned, one of the things you could do if you wanted to guess is go buy an oil pressure switch and put it in and see if that makes any difference. Because after 317,000 miles, you've been around the world 12 times. So if the oil pressure switch is a little out of calibration, put a new switch in and see what happens. But in the absence of noise, there's no harm, no foul.
Excellent.
All right? And I want to tell you something. I believe you when you talk about the Tundra because it is a wonderful truck. It is a wonderful truck, so I can say that honestly, and I don't doubt that you have 317,000 miles on it. Okay, ask me the question, last one.
Last quick question is, I've got the check engine light on right now. I know it's the catalytic converter on the number one system, the driver's side. I've read some and seen some things on YouTube. You know, you pull it out, soak it, you know, and you know, clean it, try to clean it. Does it work, or is it just wasting my time?
So you're going to spend your hard-earned money and your hard-earned time on somebody who's on YouTube University and who could be a candlestick maker, a baker, And I know you're going to hit me.
No, I was going to say, I'll just make it quick. No, I wouldn't do that.
and it could be a gynecologist for all you know. Okay? It could be
exactly
an ex-convict.
Right. So that's why I'm asking the
all right.
expert.
Yeah. All right. All right. I'm going to answer your question on the other side of this break. But I have a good answer for you, and it ain't got nothing to do with you replacing an $800 to $1,500 catalytic converter. All I really need from you is this a 317,000-mile
yes.
Tundra? Okay. You stay right there, and we'll be back right after this. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I got to do this quick. Renee just stepped out of the office, and let me explain YouTube University. One day we're doing a show, wasn't too long ago, and I say to somebody, you know, you don't know if they're a gynecologist. So she thinks we took a break, but we really didn't. So she says, you got to knock off the gynecology comments. And I said, why is that? And she says, there's no relationship between car repair and gynecology. And I said, yes, there is. She says, okay, what is it? And I said, we both work under the hood. I thought it was funny. She did. Oh, hi, honey. Oh, hi.
Yeah, uh-huh. You're going to tell that story again?
Oh, you know.
You didn't get in trouble the first time, so now you're going to try it again.
You know what? It's YouTube University that wads my panties up.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah,
okay.
Gil and I know.
Oh, yeah. When he said
YouTube, I went, oh.
And Gil was in my ear going, he said YouTube. Randy, I'm not mad at you. Don't say that.
Yeah,
okay?
I got it.
All right. You know.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling the expert,
okay.
Man.
All right. You can rinse out that catalytic converter with X-Lax, Pepto Bismol, kerosene, gasoline, whatever. What's going on here is that the catalytic converter it's entirely possible and more than likely. We have a temperature sender in the front of the catalytic converter and the back of the catalytic converter, and everything talks in voltage language, and as you know, voltage, like a flashlight battery, deteriorates with time.
Yeah.
So if the computer's
sure.
looking at the catalytic converter and both of them are saying the same thing, or let's say the back one died, but the front one's good. So the front one says, hey, I'm 400 degrees on the front side, and the back one goes, I'm minus 42. Then it goes, okay, I think the catalytic converter's bad, but all we have to do is go look at the four sensors. Now, it could be four oxygen sensors. So the oxygen sensor up front says, ooh, got a little bit of fuel. And the oxygen sensor in the back goes, ooh, clean as a whistle. Well, if the
okay,
back...
So I just replaced the upstream one, so I should be looking at the downstream.
I think... Sensor? How much did you pay for that oxygen sensor?
$90. I think it was NGK or something like
yeah.
that. I can't remember the brand name.
I would have diagnosed the whole thing for you for $90. And most shops would. Really and truly, you guessed with $90, but I'm going to go in and plug in a scanner that you don't have. It's not different. It's not the same as the code reader the little three-whiskered kid at the AutoZone has. I've got a scanner
sure.
that's going to
yep.
look at it. So I'm looking at the front one. Okay, now listen. I look at the front one. Let's say it's an oxygen sensor front and rear, pre and post, okay? I look at the front one, and I'm going to go, I'm going to make this motor run rich. So I go get a propane, small handheld propane tank, and I stick it in the intake. Now all of a sudden the motor's saying all kinds of rich. The front side oxygen sensor goes, ooh, 5, 5, 5. Oh, I said, okay, he can see rich. So then I create a lean condition. I pop up a major vacuum hose. And all of a sudden the front one goes, 1, 1, 1. Well, 1 is lean, 5 is rich. Ooh, the front one's working. So then the temperature. I can go in and gun it with that little temperature gun I've got. I gun the front and I gun the back. If they're the same temperature, then I bring up the RPM for about 4, 5, 6 minutes. Then I check it again. I need to make sure I test it where it lives, and it doesn't live sitting there at idling at a traffic light. So the idea is
gotcha.
The diagnostic procedure, and you said you're from Yuma, right?
Yeah, currently, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You can, there, what was the name of that shop in Yuma?
McLeod was there.
McLeod.
Yeah.
I think if you go to see one of the McLeod boys, I knew Dennis the dad. He's since passed away. I had all the respect in the world for Dennis. I loved that guy. He was smart, and he taught me more about business than he did car repair. But the McLeod boys are still there, so I would call them and ask them what the diagnostic charge is for the light you have. I got to run, Randy, but thank you very much. I was just telling a story while you were gone. Don't mm-hmm. don't let it bother you.
Yeah.
Candace, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. Love your show, Mark and Renee.
Thank you, thank you. It's my
okay,
show. It's not hers.
See, that's what I love is the banter between you two.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so I have a car I just love, and I call him Baby Lex, and it's a Lexus RX 300. It's been a great car. I only have 80,000 miles on it, And it's doing something kind of weird right now. I'll go over a bump or I'll kind of turn a corner and it's like it's squeaking, like the chassis, I don't know. And I'm like, what is that noise? I did take it in to someone and they said, well, it's the ball joints and they're not really ready to go yet. And you can just wait or you can replace it until it bothers you.
Oh, God. I hate that part of our industry. The answer is yes, I know what it is. No, I don't know what it is. And the guessing shouldn't be there. You know, just the other day, this is a true story. The other day, I'm driving my truck up in the ranch, and I noticed that there's a clunk on a right turn. So I practice until I can get it to happen every time. I can't diagnose it when I'm sitting in it and driving it. So I get it to where I know it can happen. I come down to the valley. I drive over to my son's house. He's eating dinner. I grab him by the ear. I drag him outside. I says, get in the truck and turn it all the way to the left and then turn it all the way to the right and then back. And when you go all the way to the right and then you turn left, I want you to stop. So I crawl underneath the truck and I put my hands on the tie rod end, the tie rod, and that goes to the left in the front wheel. I can feel the noise in it. Clunk, clunk, clunk. So then I go all the way to the driver's side and ooh, I can feel it. But I go to the passenger side. Ooh, I can really feel it. So I say, hey, I'm going to drop my truck off. I got some court dates. And actually, I'm an expert, so I'm not in trouble. But I'm going to court, and I want you to replace the passenger side tie rod end. He says, okay. So I went and picked up my truck, and he said, we did both of them because you got 90,000 miles on it. I said, okay, fine. And I drive it, and I make sure the steering wheel is straight because if it's not, I'm going to be mad. And everything's fine. You just need to practice to make it happen. And then you need to take them for a ride. Now, let me ask you a couple questions. Is it most noisiest on a stop and go, or is it more noisy on a left turn and right turn?
Right. It's more, it's not a stop and go, and it usually has to do with a bump and kind of like, even if you go over like a speed bump and then the wheel goes a little bit right, you just kind of, you feel like the chassis is okay. Kind of shaking back and forth. Not always does it do it, but most of the time.
Okay. Keep those words out. I just want you to give the shop symptoms. But if you can just practice to get it to do, you know, we got guys. I mean, our industry has guys that can ride with you, and they go, lower control arm bushing, passenger side, upper shock mount, passenger side, or driver's side. Oh, we've got a suspension problem with the lower ball joints, not the lower control arms, but the lower ball joints. Or we've got a problem with the rack and pinion is moving. It's moving left to right. There's people out there that can answer those questions if you can make it happen. So
okay,
that's what
I
you
got
practice.
You. Can you, is there, you're kind of far away from me, and I have to stay if it has to be fixed, even if it's several hours.
Tell me where you live.
So is there a Hayden and Indian School area?
Yeah, yeah. Down at, isn't Bell Auto down there, AS 80th, just west of the 101 on McDowell Road on the north side of the street, is called Bell Auto. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Bell Auto.
Yeah, B-E-L-L. Auto. He's on the north side of McDowell, just west of Pima, which is the 101. And
okay.
And his name's Craig, mm-hmm. And his wife runs the front counter,
Vicky.
And,
yep.
And Vicky. And you just say to them, I know I'm at the wrong place because Mark Salem said there's some guy here, Greg or Craig or Greg or Fred or whatever, and he can't really fix anything if you've spotted him the broken part. But I thought I'd stop by and ask you first, can I take somebody for a ride? I can make this noise happen. Then once we determine what it is, you give me an estimate because this is the proper procedure. You give me an estimate, and I'm going to ask you, do I need to be afraid of this? And they say, no, you don't. You say, okay, I'd like to make an appointment. You've given me the estimate. I want to bring it by, and I want to know if I can wait for it. And Vicky will say yes or no. She'll say, what kind of vodka okay. do you want? So that's all that needs to happen. But if Bell Auto is a great place, and he's down there on McDowell, and Craig and Vicky are the owners, and Carol Bell was their dad, was mm-hmm. Craig's dad. And even though he had a woman's name, he was a great guy. And I've known him for 150 years. So Craig and his wife, Vicky, are descendants of Carol. And what was his wife's name?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I can see her face, and
yeah.
I just can't think of it.
So I go to Bell Auto, okay?
I'm a native. That's nice. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. Okay, Strictly Diesel is up in the north part of town. Strictly Diesel is owned and operated by Nate. Nate's a good guy. He's exactly the kind of guy. He's married, though. He's exactly the kind of guy that you hope your daughter would bring home. He's also the kind of guy you probably wouldn't want to fight because his hands look like tennis rackets, and he's about 9 feet tall. But he's the kindest, nicest guy you'd ever meet. He also knows diesel like there are few other people. Strictly Diesel is a diehard service repair and parts facility. They work on foreign and domestic, and here's the key word, light diesel trucks, 1 ton and smaller. So they're located just south of I-17 on Pinnacle Peak Road, and they sell parts 24/7 on their website. So if you're thinking about a cold air kit or a fancy air filter or some kind of an aftermarket exhaust system, you can go on Strictly Diesel's site and get that as well. So that's Strictly Diesel, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate's the big cheese. He may not answer the phone, but it's a good place if you have a diesel problem. You got anything else to say?
No. Okay. Might be my show after your silly jokes again today. Anyway.
You know what? If you travel down the center of the life of the road of life.
Yes.
How boring is that? You got to bounce off.
I don't know. I've never had a chance to do that because
you bounce off the curb to the left, bounce off the curb to the right. You have to, when you live the life, you have to take the whole road up.
Yes, you do.
And you know what? If you push the boundaries, you'll know when you push past the boundaries. Jim is the general manager.
Yeah.
He didn't call me on the last one.
Okay.
And we're talking about me using the gynecology joke. Okay. And it's the truth, though, isn't it? Isn't it the truth? No. Don't make me play it.
No.
I'll play it.
Never mind.
It's the truth.
Okay.
No, it's the truth. You that was live on the air and you didn't know it.
Right.
But nevertheless, I think my automotive skills supersede my silly, stupid jokes.
Yeah. It's good you have that going for you.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, have we got any other callers? Gil?
Yes, I'll go to Cusser.
Okay, Cusser, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Well, first I have a comment, and then I have a question.
Okay.
Personally, I have installed 2 aftermarket cruise control systems on 2 of my vehicles, and the company's name is Rostra, R-O-S-T-R-A.
Okay.
And they're very good, and they work fine. And for the newer vehicles that do not have accelerator cables, they just basically plug in. So they'd probably be even easier installation.
Okay, plug and play. Okay, that was Bob who had a Saturn.
Yep.
And he was looking for a cruise control. So if Bob's still listening, give me the name of the company one more time.
Rostra. And I installed one onto my 1988 Mazda truck.
Okay, I just wanted the name. Give us the name and the spelling.
It. There you go, R-O-S-T-R-A.
Okay. All right. Now, you have a question. Go ahead.
Yes, 2005 GMC Yukon, and about 3 months ago, there was a message on the little board that came up on the dashboard says oil pressure low, but there's also an oil pressure gauge, and that reads quite fine and about 20 to 40 PSI all the time, usually more like 40.
2 minutes.
Okay.
So I told the wife to ignore the little message, which went up after a few seconds or so.
Okay.
Am I on the right track just to pay attention to the gauge more?
Well, I think you need to test the gauge. So just screw in a manual gauge, tape it to the outside of the windshield, and drive it and see if the outside, you're having an oil pressure problem. Hopefully you're north of 10 or 15 pounds on the low side, and on a good cold morning you're 50, 60 pounds. So well, let's take the sending unit out of the equation.
Hard to get to.
Wah.
And there's a little screen underneath it.
Wah.
And it's got 200,000 miles on it.
Wah. Wah. Jiminy.
Is that the gynecologist screen?
No, that's... Oh, I'm not going there. Huh? I'm not going there, buddy. No, I am wah, because you're saying, that's really hard to get to. On a 1 to 10 scale, it's a 4. It's a 4.
One minute.
If you install cruise control, that's a 5. So toughen up, Cusser. Go get a gauge and check it. I can't answer your question. You have to do a little testing, or I would have to do a little testing, and that would be it. Anyway, well, you got anything else to say? Go ahead and browbeat me now in front of all these people.
No. I'll wait till after we're off the air. I only have like 40 more seconds.
She uses bad words, too.
Yep.
And
I do.
Now you owe me something because I drove out to your mom's the other
day.
Yeah,
that was really nice.
I drove through 3 feet of snow.
Yeah.
That my Dodge was just like a mule walking through
that
snow.
Don't lie. You were having fun. You enjoyed every minute of it.
I did. But I went to your mother's to make sure she was okay.
Yeah.
And she was okay.
Yeah.
Except for
the
snow on top of her air conditioning unit that she knew was bad and her heater wouldn't work. And I explained to her that that's not the case. Nevertheless, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com is my email address. You're welcome to send me an email. If you leave a phone call, I'll call you back. See you next week.